Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him. The sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money where he earns 5% annual percentage yield. So he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Chiefs Kingdom, welcome into the AP Draft Room, the AP Draft Room podcast on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. Appreciate you joining us as always. I am Ron Kopp Jr., the lead analyst at the site, and I am riding it solo at the top of the show today. I will have a great guest a little bit into this podcast. I will have Justin Mello from the Titans SB Nation site, Music City Miracles. Check that out. Make sure you stick around for that because he will kind of give us a little bit of a taste of the Tennessee perspective of this L'Jarius Sneed trade, because that is the big news that happened right in Chiefs Kingdom since the last time we talked to y'all. But no, I am usually joined by Caleb James at CJ Scoobs on Twitter, my guy. Man, he ran into something at work, just driving him a little late as we do. You know, I dished him a few weeks ago on a podcast. So, That's part of being this being a part-time gig, but it gives me a chance to geek out with y'all for a little bit, just go monologue just for a second. So bear with me, because this L'Jarius Sneed trade does trigger a lot of reactions and a lot of thoughts to go through in terms of how this makes the Chiefs look in 2024 and beyond. I mean, you know, trading L'Jarius Sneed for just a 2025 third rounder and then also swapping the seventh round picks, you know, you're not getting that additional maybe pick this year, that maybe some people thought that you could use on a top 50, top 60 pick, even just a top 90 pick, top 100 pick, to add to the roster this year. But what that third rounder in 2025 does get you is ammunition to move up, right? You know, whether it is on day one or day two, does give you a little bit more ammunition to move up if they want to do that. And I do think there's a good chance they're thinking about that. And I'm going to be talking about maybe some draft prospects. I'm writing about that for the site. So maybe some draft prospects that'd be worth trading up for if you're the Chiefs in this draft. And so that is one view of this. But no, when I think the other view of this is you got to just take a look at the Chiefs cornerback room after this, right? You got to look at the fact that, you know, Trent McDuffie is your headliner, your all pro, your star. Super excited for his development from the slot. But I do want to keep him in the slot. I want him to play that slot position. You know, I've said this about L'Jarius Sneed in the past, which is funny, right? And we'll talk about that with Justin a little later. But the fact that, you know, I at one point I was a little worried maybe that L'Jarius Sneed, you know, moving him out of the slot and making him just a primary outside corner, it would limit his playmaking ability. And I do think Sneed overcame that by just being such a dominant shadow corner in that role, right? And really just playing it so well. But the other part of that is that Trent McDuffie has obviously some of those same playmaking things, and almost to, you know, a further extent sometimes when you see some of these plays McDuffie is making as a blitzer around the line of scrimmage, you know, as a run defender in the flat, you know, it really is a good thing to see from McDuffie. My thing is that we need to keep that, right? And that means the Chiefs need to have the outside cornerback position, you know, stocked with guys. I think they do need to keep it stocked. And right now they do have it stocked with young players. You have Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams leading the group on the outside, which is great, right? You know, we love to see those players. They're guys that have developed, have won Super Bowls. Now have kind of seen how it goes, right? They understand, you know, the path to, you know, winning and obviously just, you know, knowing how to compete on the outside with NFL receivers. And so that's very valuable, but at the same time, they are so much more valuable to this team as that third cornerback, right? You know, when they were kind of rotating as that third corner, rather than them becoming the two outside cornerbacks when they're nickel, which is their base set, right? You know, that's what you're playing 70% of your the time now in today's NFL. You're talking about, you're asking them to play 100% of the time, pretty much, or 70% of the time to be exact, but full-time starting reps, right? You're asking both of them to do that. And there is something to the fact that they haven't had to, you know, face the top guys in their career so far. You know, L'Jarius Sneed has really, blanketed them, or has really, you know, prevented them from having to go against, you know, the top echelon of these outside receivers that the Chiefs have faced maybe in their young career so far. And so it has been able to maybe, you know, ease, you know, their abilities, right? And I do think that's resulted in some of the stats you see on their coverage numbers, man. You know, I think both of them have very impressive PFF numbers in terms of passer rating when thrown against, you know, completion rating, completion percentage, excuse me, when thrown against. I mean, they both have those numbers, those stats to tell you that, you know, they are strong outside cornerbacks and they could continue to grow. But I just think it is important. You have to understand that behind them, you know, in terms of being outside cornerbacks, because a guy like Nick Jones, who, you know, showed some stuff in preseason training camp last year, you know, is a slot cornerback. He was playing slot for the most part. You know, he'd be probably the direct backup to McDuffie in that nickel role. So when you're talking about outside cornerbacks, you're talking about Nazi Johnson, who tore his ACL in early August last year and really only played 9 outside cornerback snaps over his 5 college seasons. So this is a guy that has built up a lot of hype, a lot of offseason, you know, buildup, you know, from playing well in the non-padded stuff in training camp too, in training camp for sure. But 9 outside cornerbacks in college and hasn't really been able to show anything in the NFL yet. It's just, you know, he's only 2 years in and 1 year was taken away by injury. You know, a lot of excitement, but you're banking on that and an Echo Boydo, the K-State cornerback, the undrafted free agent from last year, that his only defensive snaps last year, because he was on the roster for the most part, his only defensive snaps last year came in week 18 when the team was resting starters. So again, you're talking about a guy that has seen NFL snaps, but nothing significant. And so you're talking about those two are the direct backups of Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams right now. And Kelvin Joseph is in the mix as well, a former second round pick of Dallas from a couple years ago. He did have a promising rookie season in limited action as an outside cornerback for them. But again, just someone that, you know, went to he was cut after his second year and went to a couple teams in his third year and is now on the Chiefs as a kind of that he doesn't even feel like, you know, he may make the roster. Right. So you're talking about really no sort of strong, you know, presence on the outside, outside of Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams. So when you're talking about one injury happening to this roster at that position, you're asking a lot of a very, very young group to hold up in what is, you know, just, you know, you have to have a strong cornerback room in today's NFL. And the Chiefs are the best example of that, but they need to continue to be the best example of that by not just trusting these guys to be, you know, just, hey, you know, we got it. You know, we got our development, you know, we got the starters. We don't need to add more. No, keep the depth strong. And whether it is a veteran cornerback, whether it is a high draft pick, you know, continue to stock this group with strong players, especially on the outside, because that's the thing with Trent McDuffie is you do have three more years really with the fifth year option, 3 more years of control where, you know, for sure you have that and you want to build around that. You don't want to necessarily build. There's not really many points maybe to going after some of these slot cornerbacks, you know, in the draft or the free agent market where they're guys that really are better in the slot. You really want to surround Trent McDuffie with outside corners. Because, hey, if McDuffie gets hurt, you know, they obviously have defensive packages where Chamari Connor is manning the slot and they can switch that up. And obviously I talk about Nick Jones. You know, he's someone that has shown promise for them. You know, he's someone that they would play in the slot as well. I don't know if they'd be pushing in Jalen Watson or Joshua Williams into the slot. I really don't think so. Nazi Johnson is maybe someone that played the slot in college that maybe could give you slot snaps as well. But it's just something where I think it's important to build around McDuffie, keep his playmaking in the slot, especially because, you know, he is a that's the thing with Sneed as that slot cornerback, what I was talking about earlier, is he is a longer player. So he makes sense as an outside corner, right? You know, even though he was such a playmaker in the slot, you know, such a good blitzer, such a good run defender, you know, making so many plays, you know, as that almost outside linebacker at times, he does make more sense as an outside cornerback because of his rank, his size. We've seen at times McDuffie struggle down the field defending passes because of his limited, you know, size, right? Limited wingspan, I should say, right? You know, limited length. And so when you consider that, it does make sense to just really, you know, all that considered, you know, and especially it really does come down to his playmaking from the slot. You want to keep that. You want to keep that strong. You don't want him to be playing too much on the outside because it takes away from that. Continue to build with outside cornerbacks. So all that to say, let's look at some of the people they could add to this roster, because I do think they could be shopping in free agency, because there are some names out there. And look, I do think it's worthwhile to add a free agent corner, but only if it is truly a player that is either, you know, on the caliber of what we've seen, or probably I should say on a higher caliber of play than Jalen Watson or Joshua Williams that we've seen so far in their career. Because if you're getting guys that maybe are just on the same level as them or even below, and let's say at least on the same level of what we've seen from Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams the last few years, then if it's not that, if they're not on that level, if it's more of just a body, just draft, right? Let's just head to the draft and I'll talk about that. But some free agent names to think about as we get going is Akilah Witherspoon, the former Rams corner. He's been injured throughout his career. And I did write about this for the site, so go check it out if you want a little more detail on it. But he has been injured throughout his career. But last year, was his best season. He was fully healthy throughout the season with the Rams, got four interceptions, and does play. You know, he's a good tackler, right? He's going to come up. And that's the thing here is when I talk about outside cornerbacks, we all know in Steve Spagnuolo's system, you got to be able to tackle. And that's just the NFL now, even though they are making it harder and harder for you to tackle. But if you're going to be playing outside cornerback, you got to be able to play physical enough to make tackles on the outside, you know, play run support. And so that's where all these guys are going to have to do that to an extent. Now, you know, I mentioned Akilah Witherspoon, and, you know, the next guy I highlighted for the article is Xavien Howard. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the same case with him. He has the physical build to, you know, to play on the outside in terms of against the run. But he is definitely more of a coverage guy. He's more of a guy that say, hey, you know, go cover this guy on the outside, just like Snead, right? He's gonna be able to play that role, take away stuff, you know, make plays on the ball, get interceptions. He is a little further into his career, and he has definitely injury prone as well. But if you get a healthy season out of him, he's definitely a guy that can do the things that Snead did for you last year. But these other guys, and Stephon Gilmore is probably in that same category, although I don't know how much shutdown he is anymore. But he is in that same category where you say, look, go on the number one guy. You know, you're going to beat him up, you know, play physical on the outside. He may not be as much of a run defender maybe as again, and I think Xavien Howard's in that same category where their run defense may be lacking at this point in their career. They may be just more of that island guy where Snead can do a little bit of both. But the other guys that kind of maybe can, you know, give you that solid foundation on the outside where, hey, you know, if you're running screen passes their side, runs to that side, just quick passes outside, they're going to give you, you know, good contests on the blocks and go try to make a tackle. Steven Nelson is one, people. You know, he did not leave Kansas City in you know, with a great, you know, he didn't leave good, I guess, on the right terms, right? You know, a lot of people were ready to see him go, and he seemed like he was ready to go too. But, you know, things change over time. You know, time heals all wounds, and he has been nothing but solid since he left Kansas City, I will say. I was definitely someone that wasn't a huge fan of how he played here in his first stint, but it was his rookie contract. And, you know, for the Texans last year, I know he's been on a few teams since the Chiefs, but for the Texans last year, he was rock solid, man. I'm telling you, you know, he was definitely someone that he led their cornerback room in snaps with Derek Stingley getting some injuries at times. And he was solid on the outside for them. You know, he was able to, you know, just beat up corners or receivers, excuse me, and just kind of make it hard for guys to make plays down the field. And that's kind of what the Chiefs need, right? You just need guys that are going to play physical at the line, obviously be able to play man coverage. But, you know, you're not talking about, you know, needing, you know, the quickest of foot. You know, you just need guys that are going to be able to beat up guys. And I think Steven Nelson at this age, I think he's 31 now. It just makes sense. Levi Wallace, too, the former Steelers corner, makes sense as well. I think, you know, he was a starter last year for Pittsburgh on the outside. Not the flashiest name, but again, just a guy you can put into the room, put on the outside and feel good about starting, you know, and then you still have that depth, that strong depth behind him. And Rocky Sin is another guy I think that is important to highlight from the Baltimore Ravens last year, although he was not a starter. He was someone that was depth for them and only played in spots, but he's been a starter at times in his career. He started for the Colts and the Raiders in previous stops. And again, he actually, it's funny. Rocky Sin was actually the first guy I blogged about way back in the day to get my draft, blogging career going. He was someone I liked at a Temple way back in the day. So shout out Rocky Sin. Would be cool to see it come full circle. And again, I think he'd just be a competitor on the outside, a guy that you can trust to start out there in those nickel sets. Because I do think, you know, when you're in the base sets, when you're in the three linebacker sets, which the Chiefs do like to play because they have the linebackers to do it, and teams, they like to, force teams into, NFL offenses like to force teams into three linebacker sets at times. I think when you're in those sets, you do want McDuffie and then either Watson or Williams on the outside. You know, I just think it's in those nickel sets, do you really want to just have the plan be Williams and Watson as your starters, and then what I mentioned earlier is as the depth. So that's the argument for signing one of these vet corners. And again, it's only really worth it if they're at least as talented or as productive or on a little bit higher of a tier than Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams, who again have really been, shielded and protected by the fact that, L'Jarius Sneed has been taking a lot of the hard reps from them and McDuffie as well at the same time, even though he's a primary slot defender. But that's the thing is the draft is stocked with the guys that fit when I talk about outside cornerbacks, when I talk about physical guys, high energy guys that are going to be able to, play through blocks, play on the outside, defend, outside receivers, defend, quick passes to the outside. There's a lot of guys. And Caleb and I were going to go through, we've been doing our positional breakdowns, whether it's a star, solid, sleeper, or slacking. We're going to do that. I don't want to do it without him. I want to do that together, and we'll be back next week breaking down, maybe a couple positions, which cornerback will be one. But I just want to give you guys the names to think about in each range, because I do like to follow the Athletics consensus board. It's a collective ranking of all the mock draft or all the draft experts, I should say, not mocks, just big boards, right? The rankings of players and kind of combining them into one consensus big board. And what we get is on day one for corners the Chiefs could be considering. I don't really think you're going to be able to see guys like Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, or Cooper DeJean get to the Chiefs in the first round at cornerback. So I think you just don't really need to consider them, even though I would love to see guys like DeJean. Quinyon Mitchell would be fun, too. I think Terrion Arnold, I don't know about his fit with the Chiefs, with how I've been talking about. I think he's an all-around cover corner. Just really looks like a stud. I get the hype of him, on him. But when you get to past that point, on the top 100 Athletics consensus board, you have 28, Kool-Aid McKinstry, the Alabama cornerback. 35, Ennis Rakestraw Jr., the Missouri cornerback. I know you guys are familiar with him. And 37, the Georgia cornerback, Kamari Lassiter. All guys that are going to be on the outside, have some size to them, going to be able to play press, beat you up at the line a little bit. But I think all of them give you a little bit of different flavor of how they do that, right? I think Kool-Aid, he seems to me like the best, when you're talking about once the guy gets past you, in his route and he's running downfield and working and you're kind of having to play that trail technique. Kool-Aid seems to be the best at that. Seems to be the best of the guys that are just being that true cover corner where, in the Spagnuolo defense, where he likes to blitz, he likes to be creative up front and trust his cornerbacks. You need to be able to play man coverage and just stick on a guy. And that means a lot of times playing that trail technique where you're expecting a short pass, you're not necessarily worried about giving up the, maybe like 50 yards downfield. You're playing to defend a pass, whether it's, 10, 15 yards down the field, you're playing those quick passes. And so I think that's where a guy like Kool-Aid McKinstry, really thrives as being a guy that can really, take away the passes that are 10, 15 yards down the field. And not, get lost off the line, get when he does get beat, because you're going to get beat as a cornerback, right? These receivers are too good. You have to be able to react to that. But I do really like Rakestraw and Caleb was going to talk about him tonight, but he is a guy that does have the versatility. He has played in the slot at times. He has kind of more of the more blitzing reps than some of these guys. I do like to keep track of how many got by PFF, how many pass rush snaps each of these corners have, because it does kind of tell you how much of a playmaker they are, you know, how willing the defense was willing to use them. And Rakeshaw has a little bit higher of a number than some of these guys in that category. Two forced fumbles over the last 2 years as well. Just seems like a playmaker, high energy. I kind of mentioned, you know, all these guys have that a little bit, but I really like Rakeshaw, how he plays, his energy. And same with Kamari Lassiter. I will say he's a guy that likes to show, you know, kind of that he just made a play, and he will come up, make plays on the outside tackling. And I think Rakeshaw and Lassiter do it to a further extent than McKinstry, I will say, but McKinstry is underrated in that respect. I do think people kind of lump him in with Nate Wiggins, the Clemson corner in this class, as maybe not as physical guys, when I do think Kool-Aid brings the physicality a little bit, and would be worth that first round pick if he's there. In my opinion, if the Chiefs want to go the direction of a first round corner, you know, out of those three guys, I think I do. And the way I mentioned them would be how I rank them right now, is McKinstry, Rakeshaw, then Lassiter. I just think Lassiter is a little bit more one dimensional compared to Rakeshaw and McKinstry, but he does fit the profile of what the Chiefs want. Again, all these guys came in, you know, about 5'11 and a half. McKinstry about 200 pounds at the combine, while these other guys were closer to 185. But they all have those longer wingspans, longer arms. Although Lassiter's arms and wingspans are not as long as Rakeshaw and McKinstry. And so that kind of could be a deal breaker as well, because I do think the Spags likes to have those long armed corners to kind of redirect receivers. It makes it easier, right? You know, and to kind of mess with cornerbacks at the catch point too, when you're talking about those quick throws, you know, where quarterbacks have to get it out because of the blitz. He wants to have guys that can contest at the catch point. McDuffie is absolutely an outlier in the Spags world. But moving on to guys they could be targeting in round two, talk about corners that are physical and will come up and do something, you know, at the catch point and, you know, against the run. TJ Tampa, the Iowa State cornerback, came in at 6'1", 189 pounds at the combine. Wingspan of 78 5/8-inch wingspan. That's as long as any of these guys in this class. Just an absolute monster on the outside, really gonna play like a monster, you know, which I think there's pros and cons to playing like a monster as a corner, right? Because I do think, you know, he can be someone that might be a little more susceptible to getting beat and maybe getting, you know, holds and stuff, but not having the recovery speed, right, that some of these other guys do. At the same time, he does move well for his size, and he is just a physical football player, someone that's really going to make it hard for receivers to play comfortably releasing into their routes. Max Melton's a little bit different. He's physical, but he's not necessarily maybe that press corner. I think he can do it a little bit, but he's more just that physical playmaker, right, where he's flying around, you know, making big hits. He has a long wingspan. He's another one that has a long wingspan. But yeah, he's someone that I think, you know, you'll see blitz, make plays in that respect. He also has two forced fumbles over the last 2 years of his career, but 7 interceptions. So that tells you, I am reading the wrong line. That's actually 8 interceptions for Max Melton. No forced fumbles the last 2 years. I was actually reading that about Mike Sanders still. The Michigan slot cornerback. I will not be talking about him tonight because he is more of a slot, absolute baller of a playmaker. If the Chiefs needed a slot, I'd love to get him. Just feels like someone, again, I'm talking about Mike Sanders still now. I know I switched up real quick, but he just feels like someone that's just, you know, sometimes there's guys that just don't really fit your team need and don't really make sense for you to draft, no matter kind of where it falls for you. And he just feels like that kind of guy. So, shout out Mike Sanders still. I'd love to see him in the league, the Michigan slot corner, you know, help them win a national title this year. But Max Melton, again, just a playmaker, 8 interceptions in his career, and someone that can definitely fly around, make big hits. Just may not be as physical, you know, in terms of, you know, off the line, but he is a former receiver, and that's where maybe the technique stuff is still coming along. But he is a former receiver, and you see it at the catch point. He is someone that makes plays on the ball well. I think that's why people get excited about him is he kind of has that length and playmaking on the ball to really be a strong, you know, playmaker, right? Making interceptions, you know, just making the passes defended. I just think he'll need some work as like a true, all right, you know, press, you know, stick on this guy, you know, make sure he doesn't get, you know, open too quickly. I think he'll need some work on really, you know, being a fundamental corner. But moving on to guys in round three, I like a lot of these guys in round three. On the Athletics, on the Athletics top 100, TJ Tampa was 57. Sanders still actually came at 67. Mike Sanders still, again, the slot corner for Michigan that I just don't think the Chiefs will be interested in with how they're constructed currently. And Max Melton was 74. So at number 90, which is more of a third-round pick, right, you have Andrew Phillips, the Kentucky cornerback, who is also someone that, you know, flies around a little bit. He's similar to Max Melton to me, but he is also more he's played a lot more in the slot in his career. He's more versatile alignment-wise, can kind of do a few more things. He does have zero – he had no interceptions in 2023. I don't have his career stats in front of me. But he is someone that came in at 90. I'm a fan of DJ James from Auburn, a guy that is small, 175 pounds, but is 6 feet tall. His wingspan and arm is going to be some of the shortest in the class, which sucks. But he does have the willingness to come up and play, tackle. But he is that short wingspan is going to cost him, especially with the Chiefs, like I was kind of talking about. But a guy that doesn't have that problem is Cam Hart, Notre Dame. He was 98. He's a big dude, 6'3", 202 at the combine. Someone that shows it on the field. Just an absolute, just huge dude on the outside. Someone that is definitely going to disrupt routes. But he is going to be someone that absolutely is tough to maybe trust in those man coverage roles. He is more of a, he's going to need some coaching up to be more sticky in man coverage. So a guy like Renardo Green is really intriguing from Florida State. He comes in at about 6 feet, 186 pounds, has a decent wingspan at 74, three and a fourth inches, has the career blitz numbers to show you he's a playmaker. And you do see that on tape. He does, fly into the backfield, make plays. And he has some of the highest stop numbers. Now, stops are a number that I like to look at for off-ball defenders in the draft because it tells you that they're active around the ball. And stops are a PFF metric that actually tracks tackles that constitute a failure for the offense, right? So, a defender could make tons and tons of tackles, but, we all know success rate by now, right? On first down, do they get, I think it's 5 or more yards, 6 or more yards. I think it's 5 or more yards. On second down, do they get, more than half of their needing to get to the third down? That takes into account in the stops numbers as well. So PFF tracks significant tackles pretty much. And Renardo Green has some of the highest numbers in this entire class. So does DJ James, though. DJ James does as well. Again, with Auburn, he was a transfer from Oregon. He was at Oregon the past 2 years before Auburn. So a lot of names there, a lot of names that threw at you guys. Make sure you're looking at all of them because I do think everyone I named fits the Chiefs to an extent, playing on the outside, playing physical. And tackling is the number one thing in today's NFL as defensive back. So you have to be able, it's not about maybe even being a good form tackler. It's really the willingness. I think the Chiefs have the coaching to get you, the fundamentals strong, shaped up. You just need to have the willingness to tackle. That's what I need to see on tape to be excited about these guys. And you see a lot of that. You see a lot of guys willing to come up and tackle, willing to have the energy, coming up excited after a strong tackle on the outside. And that's the only reason I don't really like Nate Wiggins that much. The Clemson corner, he just doesn't fit in that category to me. Although he is fast as absolute get out. And definitely I get why he's an intriguing prospect for the NFL. Again, that's Nate Wiggins. He'd be like a first round pick. He may not even make it to the Chiefs because of that speed. He really does have game changing speed on the outside. Was 21 on the Athletics consensus board. But all right, before I throw it to Justin Mello, who, again, I interviewed earlier today. We just talked about the L'Jarius Sneed trade. We talked about, other Chiefs prospects. I should say he does interview a lot of draft prospects. So make sure you stick around because he had some cool takes about some of the low-key prospects that we haven't talked about on this podcast that the Chiefs have talked to in the pre-draft process, whether it's the Shrine Bowl, the Senior Bowl, the Hula Bowl, the Collegiate Gridiron Showcase. I mean, this guy was talking to everyone everywhere. So make sure you tune in. And that will be coming up just shortly. But I do just want to give you guys a preview real quick before I throw it to that of this. I'm trying to develop a Chiefs specific top 50 big board, and I'm getting close. I'm not going to give all top 50 tonight, but I do just want to give you a little preview of how I see it at the top for the Chiefs. And this is, again, at the very top of the draft, right? If the Chiefs were to have the number one overall pick, how would they draft this class? I don't include quarterbacks because they're not going to be picking a quarterback. They just won't. They just wouldn't. I don't care how good a quarterback is. It's not worth the investment. Even if you have the number one overall pick, you trade down and you would keep drafting. So I do think Marvin Harrison is still the wide receiver one, but I have Malik Nabers as a wide receiver two. And I think those guys are the two top players in this Chiefs draft class. They would pick those two over any position, anyone else in this draft class. I really, truly believe that they should, at least I would say. This is, you know, again, this is my thought on it. Obviously I'm not trying to predict. I can't predict what Brett Veach thinks, but this is just how I see it. And I think Joe Alt and Olufoshanu come right after them. I really do think Joe Alt and Olufoshanu are above Roma Dunze and the other receivers in this class. I think those guys would be absolute difference makers for the Chiefs if they were able to be plug and play at left tackle right away. So I have them as my 3 and 4 in the top 50. And hear me out, guys. If you're talking about a Chiefs specific fit and how I really like, you know, this draft class shaping up, give me three receivers in the next three slots. And I'm talking about Roma Dunze, who I do think is going to be a Davante Adams, DeAndre Hopkins type player. But Roma Dunze, and then Adonai Mitchell, and then Brian Thomas Jr. Yes, you heard me right. The more I think about it, the more I watch that receiver, Adonai Mitchell, who I did love from the get-go. But I do love Brian Thomas Jr. too, but there's something about the way Mitchell, I think, has already proven that he can get open underneath. He has the strong hands, and I really do think he's underrated in this class. Brian Thomas Jr., absolutely had a better opportunity, you know, in terms of where he was in an offense last year. I think Adonai Mitchell could have had a very similar production as Brian Thomas Jr. if he was in that LSU offense. And so I'm saying it. I do think AD Mitchell is a strong fit for this offense, and I would take him over Brian Thomas Jr. where it stands right now. But I have them all up there, right? And I do think that's how this class shakes out. I think J.C. Latham is right after them, though, at number 8, just because. I really feel like he could be a future left tackle. He's talked about that. Nick Saban's talked about that. You know, that they could have let him play left tackle. It's just, they didn't need him to, where he was. But I think he's someone that is very talented. And, you know, again, you see these other guys in this, you know, Olufoshanu had another year, in college compared to J.C. Latham's coming out after 3 years. You know, Latham, if he stayed in another year, could have been maybe the same, you know, he could be going just as high as Fashanu. You don't know. And so that's the case. So I have him at number 8. And then number 9, I do have Brock Bowers finally. You know, I just think in the Chiefs offense, I don't know if I'd take him over any of the receivers, but I do think at some point he's a very valuable weapon, and he would just be a fun weapon for the Chiefs to have. And then rounding it out, I would have Troy Fountain as that left tackle. He's a couple spots below J.C. Latham, or just one spot, I guess I should say. But I do think he's a guy that, even if he doesn't work out at left tackle, all, you know, for his entire career, I think he's going to be a great guard for the Chiefs too. And he's just a very talented player. And Felice Fuago was right behind him, so he was kind of my number 11. That's where I'll stop it. And update you guys later. But I do think that's how I see. If the Chiefs did have the number one pick, That's how I would look at it. And that is, again, AD Mitchell's kind of the shock there, maybe, because he could be available at 32. But man, I think he is just that good of a player. I think he has been, you know, he transferred to Texas. He was good at Georgia, but he had to go, you know, he's been, you know, it's not easy to go, you know, just pick up another offense right off the bat like he did last year, especially in an offense that had a lot of mouths to feed. Xavier Worthy was there too. Jatavion Sanders, a tight end. Jonathan Brooks, a running back. And it's not like Quinn Ewers was the most accurate quarterback down the field. And I think a lot of that factors into Mitchell being underrated in this class. I'm a huge fan of him. I think a lot of people are. I'll be writing him up for the site at some point as my draft darling. And so, yeah, there you go. Just kind of how I feel about the top of the class. And I think Caleb might be mock drafting at some point in this podcast too. So we'll see about that. But all right, at this point, I should throw it to Justin me and him talked through again, just a lot of stuff. So make sure you tune in for that. Appreciate you letting me monologue for you guys. I know that might've been a lot, but you know, I have a lot to say, and we have a fun draft ahead of us. So appreciate you guys listening. Now check out my talk with Justin. Here you go.
There are a lot of questions around what you eat. How is it made? Where does it come from? What are the impacts of its packaging? The What You're Eating podcast is here to help you understand how your food gets to your plate and put into context the full impact of the food you eat, whether that's on animals, the planet, or other people. Join host Jerusha Klemperer, director of Foodprint, as she dives deeper to uncover the problems with the industrial food system and offer examples of more sustainable practices. She provides practical advice for how you can help support a better ecosystem through the food that you buy and the systemic changes you push for. From practical conversations with farmers and chefs to discussions with policy experts on the barriers to sustainability, the What You're Eating podcast covers more than just the what. It covers everything from the why to the how of the food you love to eat. Listen and subscribe to What You're Eating at foodprint.org/whatyoureeating or wherever you get your podcasts. Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back to the AP Draft Room podcast. Appreciate you joining us today. Caleb and I have been breaking down the draft, the cornerback prospects, actually, today in reaction to the L'Jarius Sneed trade, the Chiefs trading away L'Jarius Sneed. And I figured it only makes sense that we bring on my guy, Justin, at Justin M NFL on Twitter, a guy that breaks down the draft, but also writes for the Titans SB Nation site, Music City Miracles. Covers the Titans and just got some big news to talk about. So Justin, appreciate you coming on, man.
Pleasure's all mine. Appreciate you for having me, Ron.
Yeah, and so let's just get into it, because you did just take a very exciting a player of ours from Chiefs Kingdom. I think some people might be listening to this in a little spite. You guys are taking away someone that we've watched develop, watch grow over 4 years of his rookie contract. L'Jarius Sneed went from kind of that playmaking slot player to all of a sudden a shutdown outside corner that can really do it all. What was kind of the instant reaction in Tennessee when you guys heard the news?
Well, the instant reaction was very much one of excitement, in all honesty. And there had been rumors in Nashville bubbling for a couple weeks. In fact, I actually received a message about a week before it was done from a source saying L'Jarius Sneed will be a Titan. Now, I didn't know if it was a fluke, coincidence, or what, but I took that source pretty seriously, and it did end up getting done a week later. Reaction was one of excitement. I think nationally, I guess it came as a surprise to many. The Indianapolis Colts had been mentioned a lot in the national media, so that was one. You know, Titans fans felt good about that, right, if they feel like they pulled one over their AFC South rival. Look, this team has been near the bottom of the league, or very, very near the bottom of the league, in pass yards allowed for a couple of seasons now. And mind you, that was with a very good pass rush. You know, with guys like Jeffrey Simmons and Harold Landry and Dina Coatry, Bud Dupree was there for a while. It was an issue of cornerbacks, just not having, you know, top-end talent. This past year, it was as big of a problem as ever. You know, Christian Fulton, who at times for them was a pretty decent number one corner when healthy. Injuries were a problem. But when playing was pretty good, his play fell off a cliff this past year. You know, everyone thought it was going to get a lot better entering contract year. That wasn't the case. Felt like he was pressing, sort of chasing the big play to have a stronger argument in free agency, but it didn't go well for him this past year. In fact, I'd say the worst year of his career. They had Sean Murphy bunting at number two corner, just kind of okay. Was in and out of the lineup with injuries. Gave up a lot in the passing game, in all honesty. Relied a lot on Roger McCreary, a guy that probably should be playing the nickel to play outside.
Yeah.
And that's what this move does, too. It allows Roger to kick inside where he's best suited. They also signed, you know, Chido Awuzie an unrestricted free agency, so he'll fill the spot opposite Snead on the boundary. It was certainly one of excitement. I know some said, oh, the contract. He's the seventh highest paid corner on an annual basis. I mean, I don't know if I've got bias showing, but that doesn't sound outrageous to me, right? Like, typically when those guys get deals, you vault right into the top three immediately. Now, the guaranteed money is there, certainly. It locks them in for two seasons, but that's the case when you sign a four-year contract anyway, in most instances. So the reaction's one of very much excitement. You know, he's the type of player, I get the impression that, you know, when a guy switches scenery, you never know, right, what's going to happen. Different scheme, right. different coaching. Titans got an interesting defensive coordinator, by the way. First-year guy in Denard Wilson, who played defensive back in the league, has been a very good DB coach with the Philadelphia Eagles, the Baltimore Ravens, when they had top-ranked defenses. So he's, first of all, he's the kind of guy that strikes me as one that will understand how to utilize L'Jarius Sneed. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, Ron, but the research I've done doesn't seem like there was a whole lot of bells and whistles to what they did with him. It was, you know, C-man, cover man, right? Like, follow around number one receivers and stay within the hip pocket. So there's not a lot of concern about, oh, you know, is he going to, the scheme going to be different? I mean, they're going to ask him to do the same thing, it seems, that Kansas City asked them to do. So certainly there's a lot of excitement around his arrival in Nash. We're waiting for the official announcement. He's passed the physical, apparently.
Yeah.
But the announcement hasn't come and the press conference hasn't come, so hopefully within the next few days.
I know, I'm surprised we haven't gotten the official word on all that. It is weird. We're kind of, you know, we're almost a week away from it now. It happened, you know, last Friday night. We're recording this Wednesday as we talk here, Justin. But no, I think, you know, to speak to your point about his scheme fit, I think that's the beauty of L'Jarius Sneed, and I also think that's the beauty of where you guys are getting him in his career. Is, man, this guy is someone that is ascending. You know, this is, last year was only his first year being that kind of corner where you can just trust him to man up on the outside, take away the number one receiver of the other team. You know, the years previous, he really was a slot cornerback, almost to the extent where I was a little concerned about him moving to the outside prior to last season. I remember being like, man, I really want them to keep his, because he is such a dynamic attacker at the line of scrimmage, a blitzer. He can be. And that's where, you know, maybe they can utilize that a little bit too. And he is more than just, you know, that outside man corner. But that's the thing, is he looked so good doing that last year. That was his first year doing it. And so you mentioned kind of how your guys' pass defense has been slacking in years past, despite having, you know, the pass rush, right? Despite having the guys up front. You know, do you guys feel good that, you know, because it was only a couple of years ago, the Titans defense was thought about as one of the top in the league, one of the ones you really just don't want to go against. Even without Vrabel, do you guys feel like this is kind of a move? And you mentioned Awuzie signing. You guys, you know, signed Kenneth Murray, too, to kind of shore up the linebacker position. Does this feel like the defense is kind of getting closer back to, you know, being one of the, you know, top units, maybe just, you know, top half units, and really give them, you know, your young quarterback, right? You know, give him a team to compete with next year. Are you guys feeling good?
In truth, not really, to be totally honest with you, because there are still some really big holes that the fan base's surprise has not been filled through free agency. One of them is edge rusher opposite Harold Landry. Big loss in Dinico Autry in free agency, going over to the Houston Texans, division rival, of course. They've got Arden Key on the other side, who I like a lot, but is best suited as a situational kind of guy. I don't think he's going to be playing first and second down, obvious rundowns. Yeah. That was Dinico Autry's job. They don't have anyone playing that position right now. The inside linebacker room, no one is satisfied with currently. You've got Kenneth Murray Jr. was not a signing that went over well with the fan base. I mean, a lot of Chargers fans were, you know, good riddance was sort of the message out of there. And yeah, that qualified as
Chiefs fans. Yeah, Chiefs fans will tell you we're not necessarily, you know, sad to see him go from
right.
the division. Or actually, I'd say maybe we
you
are
sad
to
see him
go. From
go.
The,
yeah, exactly.
Say, yeah,
what you meant.
Exactly,
yeah, that signing didn't go over well. And it paired with losing Ezekiel Shire also to the Houston Texans in free agency. Oh. So there's a huge, huge hole at inside linebacker, a big hole at edge. A run-stopping D-tackle, nose tackle, there isn't one on the roster right now. They signed Sebastian Joseph Day. It seems like he's going to play that role. But again, I don't know that signing went over super well with the fan base. And there's still a hole at safety. Now, Titans fans aren't super concerned about that one, because if you look at the free agency, there are so many good quality safeties still available. And they have flirted with like Marcus May, Justin Simmons, and a few of the others that are still out there, veteran contributors. So safety is probably one that will get filled, but certainly edge, D-tackle, inside linebacker, and D-tackle, I mean, they've got Jeffrey Simmons, one of the premier interior rushers in the league. But who's going to be playing next to him? Who's going to play opposite Landry? Who's playing behind them at inside linebacker are three pretty big concerns right now.
And that makes sense. But at least when you think about you guys having the young quarterback, Jerry Sneed signed, you know, to a long-term deal, you know, this is maybe just the beginning of a movement. So I guess, yeah, no. So I guess, is that the vibe there? And so we talk about that and maybe talk about it from a draft perspective. You guys do have a number 7 overall pick, have a very high pick in the draft. Could definitely do some things with it. I guess we can finish with the Titans perspective on maybe just your opinion on, just give the Chiefs fan, you know, we've been talking Chiefs draft takes all, you know, the listeners don't even know about the top of the class. I don't even talk about it because we're not even, you know, we don't even get close to it. So I guess just, give the Chiefs fans some takes on maybe where you see the Titans going with that first pick in the draft.
Well, left tackle is a really big need. Yeah. It's been, I mean, it's actually mind-blowing. They've probably had the worst left tackle play 2 seasons in a row. They can't even find a guy to just be league average. It's been that bad for 2 straight seasons. It's actually, again, they play like 5 or 6 different players there, and all of them were like the worst tackle in the league at the time. It's actually crazy that they haven't even lucked into like some, even below league average, I think they would have settled for at one point, but they haven't gotten that. They haven't addressed the position in free agency. I mean, they've done things to invest around Will Levis. Like, Calvin Ridley was a mega signing. Putting him opposite DeAndre Hopkins, there's a lot of excitement now about that 1-2 punch. The 1-2 punch of Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears at running back. They got a couple tight ends they like. They like the interior of their O-line after signing Lloyd Cushenberry at center. Think they're going to get a big step forward from Peter Skoronski at left guard. Yeah. They hired Bill Callahan, arguably the best offensive line coach in the NFL. So there are some things there, but left tackle hasn't been addressed. And logically, it would lead you to believe Joe Alt or Olufoshinu at number 7, right? The 2 premier offensive tackle prospects. I mean, why else would they completely ignore it in free agency? They had a bunch of money. They had $85 million in cap space, and they've done a lot with it, right? With Calvin Ridley, Jerry Sneed, Tony Pollard, Lloyd Cushenberry, Chido Ouzie. But no tackles, so it certainly leads you to believe. If the new head coach, Brian Callahan, can help himself, this is a huge change in Tennessee, by the way. Going from Mike Vrabel to, and I loved Mike Vrabel, but going from him to Callahan, what I mean by change, I've never seen a coach be more, safe keep information, like Vrabel did, versus Callahan, who is like, shoots off the cuff, is completely honest, just tells you what he's thinking. Like, really, there is no coach speak with this guy. And he has self-admitted a huge fan of wide receivers. So you don't think they'd go receiver, but I'd almost be curious to see what they would do. Like, if Malik Nabers is still there at 7, can Callahan help himself? Like, he once helped convince the Bengals take Jamar Chase over Penei Sewell. Now, I think that was a very unique situation in Cincinnati with the chemistry that, you know, Joe Burrow and Chase already had, having played at LSU. But he said the other day, Callahan, and he's not a joker, he said, tackle versus wide receiver, when all things are equal, I'm drafting the guy that scores points. Like, he just tells it how it is. So I'd be curious to see what happens at 7 if one of those premier receivers is still on the board. But I hope for the sake of Will Levis and his medical bills that it's...
Yeah, no, I'm someone who was a huge advocate for the Chiefs signing Calvin Ridley if they were going to make a big swing in free agency. So maybe not at that number. I think the Chiefs were smart to let, you got... Not that he's not deserving of that number, just that we probably shouldn't be paying anybody that kind of money in free agency. But I definitely think that was a good move. I'm excited for Will Levis's development with DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley. So good luck to Tennessee there. Good luck to y'all. But let's shift to a draft focus for sure, because you do a lot of great interviews and great draft work for the Draft Network site. And you have reported on a lot of the guys that the Chiefs have shown interest in a little bit. And maybe guys that don't get talked about as much. You know, we're talking about a lot of the guys taken in the first round, the second round, as we get into this draft process. But we're getting a little closer to the draft. We're about a month out now, actually almost exactly a month. And so, you know, these smaller school, or not smaller school, but maybe just lower level draft prospects are getting more and more interesting. So one of them that you interviewed for your site and that we have actually written up was Texas Tech cornerback Rashad Williams. Maurice, our guy Maurice Elston, wrote him up that the Chiefs met with him at the Hula Bowl. Sounds like scouts did, I should say, the Chiefs scouts did. Any strong takeaways Chiefs fans should know from talking with Rashad Williams?
Well, versatility, number one. He's a big-bodied corner, and I mean big. I think he's like 6'3", 205, yeah, if my memory serves me correctly. There's been some chatter about him moving to safety. I mean, it just makes sense at that size with the leverage, you know, certain things that become increasingly difficult when you're that big. But he also went down there to that showcase and played really well at corner. So he proves to some teams, hey, I might be able to stick at corner. He'll actually be an interesting one to follow along this week as we record on Wednesday, because he's participating in the Big 12 Pro Day. That's the first one ever, first one of its kind, extremely interesting. And I don't want to get into it. I'll be long-winded if we get into it, but how will that alter the NFL draft landscape? Now, you know, if a conference is holding a Pro Day, the other conferences follow suit. I don't think people are paying enough attention to this Big 12 Pro Day and how big it could be. Like, there's going to be some big-time guys. For Zach Frazier's there, Cooper Beebe, a ton of linemen, ton of D-linemen, like, really interesting group of guys. Receivers, Javon Baker, like, what if other conferences start doing the same? What kind of impact? You always got to think ahead when it comes to the NFL and the pre-draft process. But anyway, he's one that's going to be performing there at the Big 12 Pro Day, so he'll be one to watch.
Man, that's super interesting. I honestly did not catch that. You're just, you know, you are on the ground more so in those instances. So that's cool. Glad you brought that.
No, no individual pro days. That's going right for the Big 12 this year.
That is amazing. I did not know
that's
that.
That's groundbreaking. They're essentially holding a combine. Like, they're doing a combine of all the Big 12 schools, one pro day. So very interesting.
That is. It kind of gives everyone the right to just, or all NFL teams are just all going to be there. Their big guys are going to be there to see all the big. That's very interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. We'll have to see how that goes. But he was not the only one that we have written up for the site that you have talked to. You actually talked to, and I didn't include him on our little the thing I sent you before the show, but Anthony Gold, the Oregon State wide receiver. He's someone that Chiefs Kingdom's a little excited about because he can be an electric playmaker. Any takeaways from him? It sounded like the Chiefs talked with him, or he's going to have a top 30 visit. Excuse me. He's going to
top 30. Yeah, it's a top 30 visit for Anthony Gold. I mean, just look, undersized guy, but dynamic in the open field. You watch the tape, you'll be blown away. He's just so much fun because he's so explosive. Top 10 results at the combine in like the 40. I think he had the fastest 10-yard split now, if my memory is serving me correctly, which is crazy considering Xavier Worthy broke the 40 record at 4.21. Fastest 10-yard split, or they tied, I think, in the 10-yard split, him and X did. But the vertical, the broad, like the all outstanding results. Chiefs are looking to get more explosive. Hey, let's be honest. They've had a bit of an affinity with these, like, smaller, explosive receivers. Hasn't really worked out with, like, a Sky Moore or a Kadarius Toney, perhaps. But it's a position that they really enjoy rostering. And if they're getting ready slowly to maybe see what else they have and some other guys that can play that role for them, Anthony Gold is one. He's clearly commanding their attention. They're bringing. You only get 30 of those visits. For your listeners that aren't aware, the whole draft class, you got 500 draft hopefuls. You can bring 30 of them to your facility. You don't waste those. You bring in guys that you're interested in. So the fact that they're using one on Anthony Gold, that interest is legitimate.
Well, and Chiefs fans, and I know the fans listening are into the draft, but they know that the last few years we've drafted top 30 visit guys. Rashee Rice was a top 30 visit guy. A couple of years ago, Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams were both top 30 visit guys. And so, you know, the Chiefs absolutely have a habit of doing that. And so it's good to mention that. And you're right. He did run a 1.49 10-yard split that tied with Xavier Worthy at the combine. So absolutely electric in short areas. But another guy that you could consider be electric was a Virginia wide receiver, Malik Washington. The Chiefs, and I know at the Shrine Bowl, the Chiefs or all teams, you know, have the opportunity to talk to all the players. So it's more about what the players told you, who stood out to them as when they talked to them, correct? And Malik Washington said the Chiefs kind of stood out.
Yeah, he specifically mentioned that he thought his meeting with the Chiefs went really well, one of the better ones that he had down there. Another undersized guy, but so productive. I'm shocked we're not talking more about him. I mean, look, it's a really deep group of receivers, so I'm not stunned, I guess. But it's not about a guy that had, like, I think 95 catches this year, more than 1,000 receiving yards. Like, my Lord, right? Like, talk about being the focal point of an offense. So he's also extremely dynamic.
Well, our guy Jared Sapp actually was at the Shrine Bowl this year too, and was able to talk to some of these guys, and he came away with Malik Washington as someone that is not being talked about enough as well. So glad to hear it from a couple sources. Yeah,
and very hard to cover him.
There's not as many true slots, maybe. You know, kind of going towards the top. So I think he can push himself closer and closer to the top of the class, kind of in that. You know, I mean, in the same mold as you know, not obviously where he's going to go, Ladd McConkey, but he has some of those abilities that McConkey does as that slot player. So cool to see you like him as well. But then another guy that the Chiefs, you talked to at the Shrine Bowl, the Chiefs apparently liked a little bit of, and he will also be an explosive playmaker, Isaac Arendo, the Louisville running back. I actually am going to end up writing up him for the site soon because I do think just his overall play speed is just going to be something the Chiefs are intrigued with. Right? What do you think about Garendo?
I mean, he ran the fastest 40 of all running backs at the combine. That was a great 4.3 in the 4.3s, if I recall correctly. They had an explosive rushing attack this year. He combined. It was a by-committee backfield with him and Jawar Jordan. Garendo, I mean, the speed speaks for itself. He makes people miss in the open field. He is dangerous. And the Chiefs have had a lot of luck with day three running backs, right? Obviously, Pacheco has turned into what he's turned into. But I still think they're probably going to want to, you know, and they've got the luxury. The roster's so good there in Kansas City. They've got the luxury to add another one, I think, on day three and make sure they've got a backup plan. He's one that's extremely, extremely intriguing. I wouldn't be shocked if the Chiefs targeted him on day three.
Yeah, no, I think you can already see on Chiefs Twitter, he's someone that has garnered some attention from the fans here. So good to see. Chiefs love their explosive playmakers. It sounds like you've talked to a few of them, and so that will definitely be interesting as we get closer to the draft. But you've talked to so many guys during this process. A few other guys that have definitely stood out that have said the Chiefs have talked to them. For people that are interested, make sure you go check out Justin on Twitter. Again, it's at JustinM_NFL. He's and make sure, honestly, you subscribe to him as we get closer to the draft, because he's going to have all the top 30 visit breaking. And honestly, after the draft, Justin, you're pretty good about having the UDFA break, too. So, Justin, just let the people know where they can find you. And we'll close it there.
Yeah, I'll throw you one more before I go, because one that I'm excited to talk about was Blake Larson, the tackle out of Augustana.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Augustana University. I mean, have you ever heard of it? I haven't. I'm going to be blunt, right?
No. Like,
but I'll tell you this, the measurables are out of this world. Like the length, the wingspan, that's what intrigued the Chiefs about this kid. And I normally wouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it for your listeners. He's got an agent, this kid, that played the position, okay? Played the position professionally. Represents some good linemen in the NFL right now. He has this kid in his backyard. He goes, people are scouts in this area. They're talking about this kid. He can play, and he's developmental. He's extremely intriguing. So the traits are out of this world. Now, low-level football, Augustana, it is what it is, right? But moldable. You want to talk about round seven, a UDFA that you bring in, let him develop on the practice squad perhaps. Extremely intriguing kid. You can follow me on Twitter at JustinM_NFL. I have sat down so far with 143 prospects in this draft and counting. We are publishing 2 interviews a day, every single day on the Draft Network with high-end, not just sleepers. I'm sitting down with first-round picks. I sat down with number one overall picks in recent years. I had Tavondre Sweat earlier today, had a blast with him. I've had some really, really good ones. I got some huge ones on the schedule next week. Make sure you head over to thedraftnetwork.com. Read everything. We mock drafts every Monday. More than 250 scouting reports. We've got scouts on our staff that have won national championships at LSU, literally, have worked in NFL front offices and scouting departments. So the scouting reports are very legit. Head over to the players interview tab. Read all the work that I do there. Again, 2 interviews coming at you every single day. All these prospects, they're talking to me about scheme fits. They're talking to me about where they fit in terms of the team meetings we just mentioned. A lot of them have talked about the Chiefs, as I said. And 2 a day, every single day. I'm a busy guy right now.
Yeah, you are. And that's why I appreciate your time and didn't want to take too much of it, because this guy is talking to a bunch of prospects. And we're going to hear more from you, Justin, in terms of on Twitter, in terms of telling us who the Chiefs are interested in. So, again, Absolutely. Make sure you're following Justin on Twitter. Appreciate you joining us today. We're going to close it here, everyone. Listening, we will be back next week talking more draft with Caleb James and maybe another guest next week. So we will catch you next time. Appreciate you joining.
Absolutely.
Hey there, it's Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride, and I'm excited to announce a new element of the Arrowhead Pride experience for diehard Chiefs fans. It's our brand new newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier. Arrowhead Pride Premier is a newsletter delivered to your inbox twice a week from me. For $50, you'll get an annual subscription packed with insider coverage from yours truly and new in-depth analysis from voices around Kansas City. It's all about what I'm seeing and hearing around the team. During the season, we'll deliver a newsletter ahead of each game to get ready for Sunday, and a newsletter after each game to unpack exactly what happened. Subscribe to Arrowhead Pride Premier today at arrowheadpride.com/subscribe.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, The Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to The Current Report wherever you get your podcasts.